This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Stats, and we hand them out. But I also understand that's a unique situation. So I can kind of deal with you not having stats. The fact that we get so much pushback from just a simple height and weight is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it's bananas. There's no doubt about that, and it's part of it. Like, last two nights, I've had a couple of shadows that it was a donation to a charity auction. These kids' parents basically paid for them to come hang out with us for part of a quarter and show them what we do pregame. And I let them on the air because a couple of them have done play-by-play. They both did great. But I looked at one of them and I said, your job probably in high school basketball is way harder than mine in terms of preparing, not only getting an accurate roster, but getting stats, getting numbers. Like, you want to know down the stretch of a game who you foul. You want to know who the good free throw shooters are. And that's why I don't just put percentages. I put the number of attempts, because you can look at a guy that's, he's 7 of 8. He's 87.5%. That's awesome. When in reality, he's a 60% shooter but just caught a little run. And you go, all right, well, that's not what he really shoots. And so you got to put all that stuff into perspective. But it's part of the journey, and it's a good time, to say the least.
All right, Eric, we appreciate it, my man.
Hey, are you going to have time? Is he going to be jammed up tomorrow? Because if not, I do want to say one thing about Jeff before I go.
The floor is yours, because we have like 5 guests tomorrow. Like, it's one of those things where I just know I have to be here early because we got to record some stuff. I have no idea how it's going to go.
So then pass this note along if he's listening. It was an absolute honor and privilege to share a studio with Jeff and be part of that staff that started with Gary, and then I came in, and Jeff came in shortly after, and then Chris came in. And it's no disrespect to you guys there now, you, Gabe, and Jason and John. But being around Jeff on a regular basis, just a genuinely great human being. So my congratulations to him on an incredible run. I remember when he began coming on as a guest over at WHBQ. We were both around there at similar times, getting to work with him, and just a different way to do sports talk radio, and it worked. And we're talking about a guy that was a lawyer out of Harvard Law School that dropped all of that to become a sports writer, and a very successful one. And look, in this business, you're not going to please everybody. People are going to like your show. People are going to hate your show. People are going to think you're this or think you're that. I mean, we've all had it. Someone comes up to you and is like, "I see you're a good guy, but I hate your radio show." And Jeff,
thank you for that note.
Jeff did Jeff, and none of that ever affected him. Where we all probably stewed on the one guy that says, "I hate you." Jeff just went ahead and did his thing, and he made it his own. And it's the end of an era in Memphis sports radio, and we've had great ones come through here: George Lapidus, Jeff Weinberger, Jack Eaton, Rob Fisher, who's obviously one of my close friends, you guys, Vernon, me, Parrish, whatever. To have shared that studio with him and to have called him a colleague, I consider that a great honor, and I want to wish him all the best in future endeavors, and can't thank him enough for his friendship. He was always very good to me. When my father passed away, he was one of the first people to reach out to me and just say, "Hey, if you need anything, let us know. We'll help you with the show." And that's just the kind of guy he is. So super happy for him. And you guys had a hell of a run. I cannot believe you did not know in Clue that the one not made of metal is rope. You and I have to have a serious discussion off the air about your board game knowledge.
I was so nervous today. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like getting over the ball, man, and you're just like, you're afraid to pull the club back.
The 3-foot putt that's the money on the line. I know all about it. Usually that's a big shank for me, my man.
Yep,
appreciate you guys. Cobb, you need to tell your wife when they're making those grilled chicken nuggets at Chick-fil-A to stop putting whatever they put on them, because it's like addictive, and I need to go eat like 12 more right now after eating 12. It's amazing.
That marinade is something special, but I'll pass the message along.
I would like the recipe if you don't mind.
I'll hook you up, but I don't think you could do that.
He does have gift cards.
We'll switch it up. I know we're changing days, so this is the last Thursday. I look forward to catching up soon, brother.
All right, Eric, we appreciate it, my man.
Later.
Eric Hasseltine of the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network. Let's preview tonight's big college football game. We'll talk about that and more on the list when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith's going to join us during the next segment. Before we do that, let's get into the list. The Fiesta Bowl. All right, Cobb, we're a little more than 3 hours away, we think. I still don't know if we got to have a 6:37 kickoff time. We're announcing that the game starts at 6:30. That's what ESPN is broadcasting. From tonight's Fiesta Bowl, I think the consensus, at least according to Wager Talk, the consensus is Miami's down to a 3-point favorite. So they were handing out a lot of 3.5s up till today. So it's dropped about a half a point. But I don't know. How do you see it? Because I kind of think the game really falls on two matchups. One is, how does Ole Miss handle the run game? Because if Miami's able to run the football like they have the last two games, I think they can control the game. And then I think the other question is, Reuben Bain and Mesidor, can they get Chambliss to the ground? Because he's been pretty tough to bring down to the ground. He's only been sacked 13 times all season. Like that's kind of the two matchups that I'm watching.
Yeah, for sure. So Mark Fletcher Jr., Miami's running back. I mean, you go back to the fourth quarter of the first round playoff game against Texas A&M. He was the difference maker in that game, and then he scored two touchdowns. He scored their only offensive touchdowns against Ohio State. So arguably with that Miami offensive line and Mark Fletcher Jr., the best running game Ole Miss will have faced this year, Jeffrey. So that's a huge part of it, because a lot of times Miami just gets Carson Beck into easy mode. I mean, if it's third and short, they don't have to ask him to do too much. But if it gets into a situation where they're in third and long and it's, can Carson Beck beat you? All right, then it's a quarterback battle between Carson Beck, Trinidad Chambliss. You know, in those circumstances, I'm taking Trinidad Chambliss.
I think the other question is, can Ole Miss get to Beck without blitzing? Because I do think that was like, there's this other issue that I have with Ole Miss's defense. So if you look at their EPA per play for the whole season, it's around 0.5, which would put them about 50th nationally. And if you
for being one of the four defenses left in the field, they are rather average.
However, if you look at them since November the 1st, they are 14th nationally EPA per play. Now, all right, let's look at who those games included. Those games were, I believe that includes South Carolina, who had an abysmal offense, Florida, the Citadel, Mississippi State, Tulane, and Georgia.
Well, the one good team in there was Georgia, and Ole Miss's defense, especially in that middle eight. Like when Georgia had the football on multiple occasions with a 9-point lead and a chance to kind of break it open, the Ole Miss defense rose to the occasion and played really well in those moments.
Did you see Bill Conley's post-game win expectancy?
What was it?
Ole Miss had a 98.1 post-game win expectancy, and they were 2 yards away from losing the game.
Oh, wow.
Like you'll see the that was a new one for me.
Well, you think about it, like the Kawan Lacy fumble, like there were a lot of moments in that game where Ole Miss honestly could have let go of the rope, and I'm shocked their post-game win expectancy was that high. Like I would have loved to have seen like what ESPN's like real-time win expectancy was for Georgia when they had the football up 9 late in the first half. They were getting the football to start the third quarter. Like at that point, Ole Miss was hanging on for dear life. Like in that moment, there's no way that Ole Miss had better than a 12 to 15% chance of winning the game.
I mean, I want to know, what do you think it was when it was first and goal? I think it was first and goal at the 5, then it was second and goal at the 2.
Yeah.
And then Ole Miss forces the negative play on second down, and then I still don't know why Georgia threw the football on third down.
No, that's forever one of the more baffling high leverage situation coaching miscues of, you know, Kirby Smart's entire tenure, to be quite honest, because you played a little more cautiously there. You're going to OT, probably worst case scenario. And then the other part of this matchup, as you alluded to, here's where it could go wrong for Ole Miss. All right, let's say Miami only rushes four. They drop a linebacker into spy, which you have to do, I think, against Trinidad Chambliss. And then you've got six in coverage. I mean, in that scenario, like, Ole Miss is going to have to execute really well. Chambliss is going to have to make some of these throws that he made against Georgia that he usually makes but doesn't always make. We're not talking about a guy with a 75% completion percentage here. So is there a scenario where Miami can force a few three and outs by putting a guy in spy? That works if Messidor and Bain are getting home with just rushing four.
All right, so at the half, Georgia had, according to ESPN's win probability, Georgia basically had an 82% chance of winning.
I found the max for Georgia.
They had an 88% chance of winning after Ole Miss turned it over on downs on fourth and one to start the third quarter. So Ole Miss gets the three and out, then goes gets a fourth and one basically at midfield, and they don't get it. 88.8%. And then Georgia also had about a 75% chance of winning when it was first and goal. It was first and goal at the Ole Miss 8, but then it was second and goal at the 2.
Yeah, I'm not shocked by that. So their back was against the wall on numerous occasions. Now you look at this matchup too, and it's like, okay, Miami has basically just forced its opponents to beat themselves so far in this playoff. We haven't seen them like go out and assert themselves offensively, certainly not in the passing game. So if Ole Miss can get ahead of Miami and put Miami in a situation where they got to put the football in Carson Beck's hands, I think that's a ideal scenario for Ole Miss, because I still don't believe that Carson Beck is a guy who can lead you to a college football playoff national championship with his right arm. Like, it's with the defense, it's with the offensive line, it's with the running game. It's not with Carson Beck going out there and beating you. So if Ole Miss cannot beat itself and not do what Julian Sayin did, throw a terrible pick six, and not do what Marcel Reed did and cough the football up and fail to score in the red zone. Like, if Ole Miss just keeps it on the rails here, like, okay, Carson, like, go prove that you can win a high stakes postseason game, because I just don't think that he's that guy.
I think he's been very good on third down. So, like, I thought in the Ohio State game, his numbers were not going to overwhelm you, but I thought he was really good in the game, because that defense is really good. He never really put the ball in harm's way, but
he never had to.
Correct. And he did start running more. He made some big scrambles.
Yeah, actually kind of looked fast. That was weird.
Well, remember, he was pretty mobile at Georgia at times. Like, I just think very quickly you're going to know if Ole Miss is – if Miami's getting 4 or 5 yards a carry to start the game.
Going to have to win the turnover battle.
I think it's going to be tough. But if they stop the run, I think they can be game. And then I think the real question will be, is Chambliss, like, sack-proof? Because even in, which I think probably Oklahoma's the best defensive front he saw all year.
Well, it's yeah, right. So is it, not only are you sack proof, but here, you know, when I talk about Miami putting a linebacker in spy, like, okay, he can evade the pass rush, but then what can he get with his legs? Or then what's available to him after he improvises? Like, can Miami's DBs, like, maintain good coverage 5-6 seconds into a play? If they can, then, like, you're making Trinidad Chambliss make these unbelievable throws like he did against Georgia, but throws that may not always be repeatable. What's the weather? I mean, I guess it's Arizona. It's going to be kind of warm.
It is raining there, but I think it's
inside.
It's a dome. It's technically retractable. I just assume the roof is closed. But
okay, well, no, not going to be an issue.
Never forget, this is notoriously one of the, like, the slipperiest tracks in all of football.
I think that probably hurts Miami more, because you think about, like, the cutting on a dime that Malachi Toney does and stuff. Whereas, like, I feel like Ole Miss's weapons are more like straight line runners.
With the exception being of Chambliss, like, what if, like, it sacks,
right,
like,
the Johnny Manziel Houdini stuff?
Right. Some of the sacks that he avoids, what if he just slips and goes down?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you think about it, there were three plays in a row in the game changing drive against Georgia where, if he had slipped, the game goes in a totally different direction there. I mean, first it was the little shovel pass dump off. Then it was hitting Logan Diggs for that first down.
Yep.
And then the next play was
No, it was Lacy.
It
was Lacy, and Lacy with his shoulder took, like, Lacy had to, looked like, you're, oh, that's an easy first down, and then two Georgia guys just absolutely stoned him twice, and he didn't cough up the ball. Diggs actually made, there was a fourth down throw where Diggs stepped up and actually made a really good block on a blitzer, and that allowed Chambliss to have time to make the throw. I don't know. What I find interesting about this is, we have two games with essentially field goal spreads.
Yeah.
And that's pretty unusual in the semifinals. Do you care about this stat at all? In the college football playoff era, in the semifinals, favorites are 16-6 straight up and 13-9 against the spread.
That doesn't sway me like too much in any direction. I've picked Ole Miss to win this game. And to me, it's as much about the on-the-field breakdown, all of which is very important. Like, the game is won in your game plan and the way you execute it, of course. But there's this element with Ole Miss, this team of destiny idea and mantra that feels to me like it's really coming to fruition here. And with Miami, I feel like in a certain extent they've become a opportunistic more so than like you look at the way they beat Texas A&M. It was horrible weather, which really set up perfectly for their defense to dominate and for their running game to flourish. And that's kind of the way
and
they
to neutralize what I thought the biggest mismatch or where they were going to have the biggest problems was covering the A&M receivers, and that completely neutralized where I thought A&M had the advantage
because of the wind. It set up perfectly for the way Mario Cristobal built that program. And then you look at Ohio State, I just can't get over the Julian Sayin pick six. It's a 14-point swing that makes a difference in the game. And so, like,
he also took some horrific sacks. It's one thing to get sacked. He was taking, like, the first down, I'm going to drop all the way back, take the 15-yard sack, it's second and 25.
Yeah. Whereas I look at Ole Miss and I see a team that's had to go out and win games, and a team that's been confronted with adversity time and time and time again and come through it on the other side. And I think when you get to this point, like, there's something to be said for that. And I feel the same way about Indiana. Like, Fernando Mendoza, his worst moments, his ugliest interceptions, he's immediately followed them up in every close game they've had with either go ahead or game winning touchdown drives. And so there's a clutch gene with both those quarterbacks, Trinidad Chambliss, Fernando Mendoza, that the other quarterbacks in this field don't have. Like, you could reasonably argue Dante Moore is the most clutch or the most talented quarterback in the field. But we haven't
best,
seen
certainly
him
the best. You can make an argument he's the best pro prospect.
Sure, but we haven't seen him.
Even though Mendoza's probably going to go one.
I mean, at this point.
All right, we'll I have to ask the important question. Is the reputation of the Southeastern Conference completely in the hands of the University of Mississippi?
How crazy is that?
Can they save a disastrous bowl season that follows up, let's be real, kind of another disastrous bowl season?
Well, it's just funny, isn't it? Like, the idea that on SEC Network right now, they have to talk about Ole Miss.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know?
Help us, Obi-Wan, your only hope.
Yeah, Chris Doering and Roman Harper and Jordan Rodgers and Tim Tebow and Paul Feinbaum and Laura Rutledge, and they all do a great job, but they spend 90% of their time talking about five or six teams. And now Ole Miss has never been one of those teams that they talk about. and they have no choice but to put their eggs in that basket and to respect one of their own in a way they've never respected them before. And it would be a pretty incredible statement if Ole Miss won this thing, because you go back to 2019, LSU wins it, 2020, Alabama wins it, 21 and 22, Georgia wins it. And then if you have a team like Ole Miss then win it, that's four different programs in the last 7-8 years that would have won it from the SEC. So that then redeems the league in a really significant type of way. But if they don't, and it's going to be hard to win two more games, then, I mean, yeah, get ready, man, because the SEC is going to be a huge story, because you look at the coaching ranks and, like, the way that the Big Ten's amassing coaching talent and the way that the SEC seems to sort of be losing it. I don't know that it's going to get back to that level of historic dominance anytime soon.
It does feel like the national champion's playing tomorrow night.
Well, probably, yeah. I mean, I think whoever, regardless of the potential matchups that we get, whoever that Big Ten team is that comes out of tomorrow night's game in Atlanta is probably going to be a touchdown favorite in the Natty.
I think if it's Oregon-Miami, I think it could be closer to a field goal. If Ole Miss wins and they play Indiana, you could talk me into that thing starts touching double digits.
Yeah.
Because the other thing about, like, that's the other thing about tomorrow. I'm at the point with you where it's like, my eyes tell me Indiana's going to win the game. There's no reason, like, I see no reason why they went to Altson and won. But it's like, gambling brain tells me Oregon's going to be the right side.
Well, I don't know. I look at the way Oregon played against Texas Tech, and I was just not impressed.
No, that's my because I actually agree with you. I'm not confident Oregon's that good. I weirdly think their defense is the best unit they have. And we're just so conditioned to thinking, not only with Dante Moore, but it's like Oregon offense. Cobb, do you realize this? I know you and I were texting. Baron Morton was... there's a legitimate case that he statistically had the worst game a quarterback's ever had in the college football playoff. Dante Moore was, like, of the 86 quarterback starts, Dante Moore was like 75th in EPA per play. Like, he was not good either. And now, granted, that's the other thing that was insane. Do you know what the second best defensive performance was of the college football playoff?
Was out of its mind defensively.
They just willed them to stay in that game as long as humanly possible.
I mean, and that's the thing is, like Texas Tech's offense was so bad.
Just that, do like, something. Oregon, like something. Just Oregon anything.
Oregon could not mess that game up, and they tried. Like they
kept going for it on fourth down. Who was on the call? Was it Pash and DeVort? Whoever was on the was it Jesse?
Right. Yeah.
I think it was Palmer. Yeah. Palmer's like, you could tell at one point he was just like, take the points.
Yeah. And that's
he's like,
the
they can't score on the other side. Like, take the points.
I don't think there's a team in college football that has, like, struggled to meet its ceiling like Oregon has all season. The thing is, though, even Oregon's B-minus game, which is the level they've been operating at for most of the year, it's been good enough to get them here. So that's the scary part. What if they suddenly play A+? Like, we saw it in the first half against James Madison. Now, granted, you take the level of opponent into consideration, and that's the big hurdle. It's like, can you play that way against a good team? Because we really haven't seen that.
I still don't trust Lanning. I think it has been unquestionable building the program, like leadership of the program. Like, he checks all those boxes. I'm still not sold on the guy game day.
Well, he's if you're picking your archetype in CFP 26, like, he's the motivator or the program builder. He's not necessarily the tactician. And the problem is he's got two coordinators who, I mean, for over a month have been sidetracked with other jobs. And that gets overlooked because we all talk about the Ole Miss insanity with the coaching battle between LSU and Ole Miss. And it's certainly not ideal, but Oregon's going through that and arguably going through it at the same or even a larger level, because it's both their coordinators who are hitting the exits. Tosh Lupoi going to Cal and Will Stein going to Kentucky. And it was hard for me not to believe that some of the issues we saw on offense in the quarterfinal game weren't a result of the fact that they've got an offensive staff that's been pulling double duty, two jobs on opposite ends of the country here, you know, over the last month or so.
And I give full marks to that Texas Tech defense is disgusting.
Like, yeah, well, it's why I thought they were going to make some noise in the playoffs. I underestimated how bad they would be offensively.
I think if they would have just taken some knees, they would have been fine. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at a certain point, like, that was it. All right, this is the other thing that I was curious about. Your college boys, who are they rooting for? Because there is a little shake hands Tennessee Ole Miss angle of Tennessee gets to be like, I told you so about Kiffin. But there is like some commiserating. Like, if you've ever had like, you both like have dated the horrible girl, like there is like a group therapy session of like, I know what that's like, man.
Well, the difference now, the analogy, I tried to come up with it when I was on with Gabe yesterday, but it's come into focus a little bit since we talked. And it's basically like this, like Ole Miss is like the boyfriend who got dumped by the, you know, the 10 or whatever, but instead of sulking and like just burying himself in a, you know, in a bag of Reese's peanut butter cups, like he started going to the gym and glowing up and is now he's jacked, right? Because Ole Miss in the wake of Lane Kiffin's departure has used it as a motivating and galvanizing force. Whereas Tennessee was like, well, Derek Dooley, come on down. And we're going to let our recruiting class disintegrate. And at that time, there was no recourse because there was no transfer portal. And they just, the program died.
I just kind of, I see it like the scene in Forgetting Sarah Marshall when Russell Brand and Jason Siegel are out surfing. And he's like, man, like I wanted to hate you. Like, and then like when Russell Brand's like, so as like he was like when he was going through Sarah's iPod, like in this just mass of just disgusting crap, I heard something that was quite good. It was Jason Siegel's music. He's like, thanks, man. Like I view it like that scene. Like there's just like a commiseration of like dating Sarah Marshall.
Uh-huh. I love that. That's so good. I feel like, don't you, most of the SEC is in the Ole Miss corner here.
I don't know, because I also think if you're an SEC person, like, do you really want to see, like, a team like Ole Miss win? And I think if you're at, like, the lower levels, I can see it because you can reasonably say to yourself, if they can do it, why can't we? Like, I think that's a reasonable thing. And I'm not trying to gloss over all the structural things that Ole Miss has done to put themselves here. But, like, I mean, if you're Florida, are you really rooting for Ole Miss to have a national title before you have another one?
Yeah, right. Well, I think SEC fans still, even if Ole Miss were to win tonight, even if they won again, I think SEC still fans would still have a hard time viewing Ole Miss of the future in the terms of like what they would have accomplished.
Well, it's the same. I think it's the same problem. Like we talk about how the Big Ten just exists for Ohio State and Michigan. If Indiana goes and completes this season, which will be one of the most complete dominant seasons we've ever seen, like you really think they're inviting Indiana to the big boy table?
Yeah, right. Well, at this point, though, you do have to look at Indiana and say they have staying power.
Absolutely.
Like, still TBD with Ole Miss. Like Pete Golding is 10 out of 10, A-plus job so far.
Grove
Collective
know.
Has responded in an unbelievable way to the Lane Kiffin adversity. But we still, I mean, the man hasn't run a spring practice yet. I mean, for crying out loud.
No.
Like, there's nothing that we don't know yet whether or not.
He's done everything you could reasonably expect of him so far. We still have no idea how he's going to run a program.
And for crying out loud, you know, Kevin Ollie won a basketball national title at UConn. And then
Larry Coker has a national title in football.
Right, right. So, you know, there's still
Ed Orgeron and Les Miles, who are certifiable idiots, have national titles.
Yeah, it's unbelievable what Ole Miss has accomplished. And it, like, I would love for the ride to continue for two more victories so that less and less of the credit would then go to Lane Kiffin and more of the
It's killing him. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins the program next. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
ESPN. Jason Smith for two more days, or really one more day, is the co-host of the Jason and John Show. But starting next Monday, you'll start your day with J&J from 9 until 2. He's on the Everything app. At Jason Smith 929. Jason, I know this is a question that Jeff has been pondering. I haven't really gotten a sense one way or the other, but how do you think Tiger fans, how are they viewing which team to root for of the Final Four in the college football playoff?
Oh, I think it's a good question. I mean, listen, you could go a couple ways here, because I think in a lot of ways, while we're talking about, you know, Power Four teams, there is some they haven't been one of the haves in college football, and that's Indiana, that's Ole Miss. And so from that standpoint, because you're sort of bumping out the Alabamas, the Georgias, the phrase we use in basketball, the Blue Bloods, and you've got these teams that, because of this new system and because of the way that you can spend, sort of some of those historically built-in advantages that the Blue Bloods, in this case, that have had, they're not – as great advantages anymore. And so long as you're in that P4, you can spend. And so I think from that standpoint, while no, Memphis, I'm not trying to say clearly, Memphis doesn't have the cachet that someone in the Power Four would, like an Ole Miss or an Indiana. I think from the sentiment that you've got some new players in this thing, some new blood. You know, the Ole Miss, Indiana, I'd even pull a team like a Vanderbilt that didn't make the playoff, but has obviously raised the standard of that thing. And in terms of where they are now as a program, to a point where, you know, more can play. And I think from that sentiment, you know, more can be involved. I think from that sentiment, you know, Memphis folks, Memphis people in Memphis, folks that aren't tied to Ole Miss could look at this thing and say, yeah, I can root for Ole Miss, especially when their coach left, kind of like a coach left, not too much different from when a coach left back here, a basketball coach in 2009. So I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that Memphis fans can relate and would pick Ole Miss as the one. But you've got some, you got the folks that aren't usually here, and I think Memphis fans can appreciate that, whether it's Indiana or Ole Miss or Oregon.
Jason, it sounds like, speaking of Memphis football, like, sounds like they got their quarterback here.
They're going the Trinidad Chambliss route.
Yeah, a D2 kid who, due to a personal hiccup, had to go the D2 route. Now he's coming back to the FBS level. What do you make of Marcus Stokes at Memphis, the possibilities there, and kind of the job that Charles Huff is doing so far?
I think I like it, especially if Huff decided – I don't know, maybe I like it more because I liked Arrington Maiden and the thought of him coming back. I was at that Tulane game, and we finally saw Arrington Maiden throw in that game. And you had a chance to beat that Tulane team with Arrington Maiden. And with him, I think Memphis was in his top four, and he ended up going to JMU, I think, this morning. But my point is, if Huff had a choice, right, between Arrington Maiden, if he did, and Marcus Scott, and Marcus Stokes, excuse me, and he picked Marcus because, I mean, you're talking a guy that's been formerly a four-star quarterback. Before that incident, you talked about, it's one that we've seen in sports. It's one we've seen across all walks of life. Dante DiVincenzo once was in that position where he said that N-word during a rap song. You're caught on it. This kid's had to go a completely different route as a result and really kind of pay the price. I mean, he was headed to Florida. You had to go D2 as a result. We've seen these before. I think the important part in this conversation, you know, the important part about what hopefully this young man has learned and how do we now look at it when he's coming to a program that represents a program that sits in the largest predominantly black city in America now. Think about this. Charles Huff isn't taking a chance on Marcus Scott if he feels like he hasn't learned anything, if he feels like he hasn't grown. You also have a black athletic director. And so my point, and we talked about it on our show, is I think, you know, if you're looking at this kid's past and holding it against him still after he's – and he has publicly, from everything else we can tell, he has apologized, said he was wrong, said he had to grow. You're talking about a situation that was almost now 3.5 years ago. If Charles Huff and Ed Scott aren't holding it against him and they believe this young man has grown – not to mention he's a former number 14, I think, dual-threat quarterback in the country. I think we should probably feel like not only in terms of off the field, they're comfortable with it. We probably should be too, that he has, because I'm sure he was asked about. But I think on the field, this is the dual threat quarterback that Charles Huff says he likes to have, that Charles Huff, you know, says he prefers. So I think there's a lot of reasons to like it, and particularly if what I think is going to probably be the case, Cobb, you've got a more mature young man and leader as a result of what he's learned and what he's been through, not to mention he looks like a pretty hell of a good quarterback. I mean, I love that Huff went out there and said, we got us a gunslinger, you know, on Twitter. I think that gets people excited. And, yeah, man, I think there's a lot of things to like about this. It looks like your starter to me.
All right. How do you feel about Saturday night? Your Bears, unquestionably fantastic year one for Ben Johnson. Yeah. All the check marks are there. Are you in the category of, we should beat the Packers, we're at home, or are you in the category of, could we have literally played anyone else?
So,
or somewhere in between?
So I was listening to you, and you're dead right that I was listening to you talking about the boxes that were checked and talking about me in this Bears season. You're right. I mean, what we wanted to see was confidence. We wanted to see that Ben Johnson's the guy, that he's a true leader of men, and we wanted to see him coach Caleb.
Yep.
And see a productive result. You in our wildest dreams, Jeffrey, I think me and my son and anybody I talked to that was a Bears fan didn't have us above 10 wins. So you're sitting on 11 wins, you're the division champ, and you're in the playoffs in Ben Johnson's first season. That's a success. Now, I'm gonna be speaking that sort of talk. I mean, I'm going to have that and be thinking that all the way up until kickoff. You know where I'm going with this. Like, I can tell myself all day long, this is free money. You're ahead of schedule. The Green Bay's the one that are the franchise that's all in, having paid Jordan Love, having paid Micah Parsons. They're the ones in terms of timeline that the pressure's on. I can tell myself all those things, and I think it to be factual and success for Bears. But by the time that thing kicks off, because the Packers have lost four in a row, because we just beat them 2-3 weeks ago when they got no sacks on Caleb because Micah Parsons is no longer there. I think once that game starts, Jeffrey, just like you and I both as competitors want to, we're going to want to win. And nothing in there is going to feel like free money right once that game starts. And so I think a couple of things can be true there. Look, I look around the rest of the NFC, and I see this banged-up Green Bay team that's lost four. Keep in mind, we're the ones that put Jordan Love in concussion protocol. While we have – one of the worst defenses in the league, this is not some juggernaut, you know, Packers team at this point. It is our rival. They have had our number, but I think now we've won, what, two of the last three? If you go back to last season, regular season, splitting with them this year. So maybe after winning, what, Aaron had won 11, 12 in a row, whatever it was, Aaron and Jordan combined, maybe the tide's turning a little bit. So, yeah, it's all free money. Bears, this season has been a success. We're ahead of schedule. Our quarterback's on a rookie deal. We can spend in other places. It ain't nothing but bear down once that game starts on Saturday night. It's always Green Bay sucks. So we better win once it starts, Jeffrey.
No, I think you're right, because also it's not just Ben Johnson and then Caleb. It's also like, hey, they needed to rebuild the offensive line. Like, it worked. Like, you know, like all the things that they kind of needed to do. I'm not saying like it was the perfect, it's not like the Bears went, you know, 17-0, but it's like all the things that you set out and saying this would be a successful season, those were all accomplished this year.
They went and got an entirely new front three on that line that includes an All-Pro and Joe Tooney, and they fixed it. We were the worst sack team in the league last year, and they fixed it. Now, Jeffrey, you see, you can feel where I'm going. With Caleb on this rookie deal, Poles has got to attack the defensive line. We get zero pressure. Montez Sweat is really not a number one pass rusher, even though he's paid like it. You got to get somebody else on that other side and address the defensive line. You do that while Caleb's on this rookie deal, then all of a sudden you're maybe ahead of the Packers in that sense, and that, you know, you haven't had to pay Caleb yet. And so this is hopefully a window. We're here. That's what's fun about this, Jeffrey. It was like warp speed going from incompetent last year with Eberflus to now you're, you know, in the thick of things, you're the two seed. And if you make a couple of the right moves this offseason with this flexibility you've got, you could really be competing next year. Key is, hopefully, it's not a sort of Washington great run. And I'm not saying Washington was a one-off last year. I still believe in Jaden Daniels, but hopefully it's not, oh, man, high-powered, went to death, you know, just went to warp speed this year, and then it's this huge setback. I think, you know, the next year, I think with the way it's built, like you mentioned, that offensive line is real. And if you can get some defensive guys, Bears got a chance to get, you know, really back in the thick of things, maybe in a sustainable way, perhaps, where you're not just a one-off.
Jason, what will your personal approach be to watching this game on Saturday night? Are you, like, do you nervously pace around the living room, you go to a sports bar and try to commiserate with other Bears fans? Like, how do you handle a game of this magnitude as a fan?
So I've done the whole thing. I used to go to the sports pub that was right there on Park and all back in the day before it was all, you know, DirecTV and Sunday Ticket and all of us Bears fans, folks we didn't know. You know, it'd be a good way to meet folks. And, dude, we became family. And those times were some of the funnest as a Bears guy, like growing up and watching it in that way. But once Sunday Ticket came around, we're all becoming adults and buying and getting it at home, it became that. And while Cabo was open at one point, to having playoff parties. Keep in mind, I'm the guy that invited Brad and John Martin, my partner, over for the double doink. Bears were 12-4 with Mitch Trubisky. We're back. Oh, boy, this feels real. Kind of probably like I'm talking in terms of the energy, you know, right now today. That season, a few years, the last time the Bears made the playoffs, I had these guys over here. They're filming. You know, that kick goes up. Oh, it looks good. Oh, no, it's a – oh, no. And so they're filming the damn thing. Right. And oh, Jason's team just lost from inside my home. And so from that standpoint, from that point on, God, because they broadcast, because they made so public my pain. No, man, it's just me and the son, brother. That is how we do it now. Me and my 11-year-old son, who I know is truly with me at all times. Even if we lose, he's not going to go broadcast my pain publicly. Now I've graduated to a point where I'm comfortable enough, man, watching that thing with the kid. You know, us going around singing Bear Down every time the Bears score, just like they do at the stadium. That's the way I do it now, brother, and the way we're going to do it this playoffs on Saturday, me and the kid.
Jason, we really appreciate it, my man.
Y'all take care, man.
Jason Smith for one more day of the Jason and John Show. Again, starting next week, you'll start your day with J&J from 9 until noon. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll tell your story next. Right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb. Sam Amick over at The Athletic had a sit-down with Giannis Antetokounmpo, and here was the tagline. A late-night discussion with Giannis Antetokounmpo, who tells me he'll never ask for a trade out of Milwaukee. Quote, "It's not in my nature, okay," the Bucks big man said. "I'm not going anywhere. I'm invested in this team. I want to turn this team around. I want to play good basketball. I want to be healthy. I want to help my teammates. I want to win games. The last six games we played were 4-2. We have a lot of games in front of us. I'm locked the F in. I'm locked in. My priority is just staying healthy. The I will never ask for a trade is where I think that's the don't tell these story, tell your story. Because even it's going to be your agent.
Yeah, your agent can ask
correct.
For a trade. Correct.
Like, it's just lawyering.
Giannis won't have to be
correct.
Bad. And at this point, I mean, the guy brought a title to Milwaukee. If he wants to go somewhere else, they're not going to hate
him,
right? I'm
convinced 98% of him not asking for a trade is just to prove Shams wrong.
Very well may be.
All right, my man. Have a good weekend.
Appreciate it.
That is David Cobb of CBS Sports. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. My thanks to Eric Hasselstein and Jason Smith for joining the program. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.